Please do this for me, the woman said. I'll remember you with gratitude. Tell them downstairs that I insist, say that. But don't call any unnecessary attention to yourself or to the situation. Just say that this is necessary, that I request it. And that's all. Do you hear me? Nod if you understand. Above all, don't raise an alarm. Everything else, all the rest, the commotion, that'll come soon enough. The worst is over. Do we understand each other? The young man's face had grown pale. He stood rigid, clasping the vase. He managed to nod his head. After securing permission to leave the hotel, he was to proceed quietly and resolutely, though without any unbecoming haste, to the mortician's. He was to behave exactly as if he were engaged on a very important errand, nothing more. He was engaged on a very important errand, she said. And if it would help keep his movements purposeful, he should imagine himself as someone moving down the busy sidewalk, carrying in his arms a porcelain vase of roses that he had to deliver to an important man. She spoke quietly, almost confidentially, as if to a relative or a friend. He could even tell himself that the man he was going to see was expecting him, was perhaps impatient for him to arrive with his flowers. Nevertheless, the young man was not to become excited and run, or otherwise break his stride. Remember the vase he was carrying. He was to walk briskly, comporting himself at all times in as dignified a manner as possible. He should keep walking until he came to the mortician's house and stood before the door. He would then raise the brass knocker and let it fall once, twice, three times. In a minute, the mortician himself would answer. This mortician would be in his 40s, no doubt, or maybe early 50s. Bald, solidly built, wearing steel-framed spectacles set very low on his nose. He would be modest, unassuming, a man who would ask only the most direct and necessary questions. An apron. Probably he would be wearing an apron. He might even be wiping his hands on a dark towel while he listened to what was being said. There'd be a faint whiff of formaldehyde on his clothes. But it was all right, and the young man shouldn't worry. He was nearly a grown-up now and shouldn't be frightened or repelled by any of this. The mortician would hear him out. He was a man of restraint and bearing, this mortician, someone who could help allay people's fears in this situation, not increase them. Long ago he'd acquainted himself with death in all its various guises and forms. Death held no surprises for him any longer, no hidden secrets. It was this man whose services were required this morning. The mortician takes the vase of roses. Only once while the young man is speaking does the mortician betray the least flicker of interest or indicate that he's heard anything out of the ordinary. But the one time the young man mentions the name of the deceased, the mortician's eyebrows rise just a little. Chekhov, you say. Just a minute and I'll be with you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Olga said to the young man. Leave the glasses. Don't worry about them. Forget about crystal wine glasses and such. Leave the room as it is. Everything is ready now. We're ready. Will you go? But at that moment, the young man was thinking of the cork still resting near the toe of his shoe. To retrieve it, he would have to bend over, still gripping the vase. He would do this. He leaned over. Without looking down, he reached out and closed it into his hand. Note. When Errand was included in the Best American Short Stories, 1988, selected from U.S. and Canadian magazines by Mark Helprin with Shannon Ravenel, it was published with the following note by Carver. In early 1987, an editor at E.P. Dutton sent me a copy of the newly published Henri Troyat biography, Chekhov. Immediately upon the book's arrival, I put aside what I was doing and started reading. I seemed to recall reading the book pretty much straight through, able, at the time, to devote entire afternoons and evenings to it. On the third or fourth day, nearing the end of the book, I came to the little passage where Chekhov's doctor, a Badenweiler physician by the name of Dr. Schworer, who attended Chekhov during his last days, is summoned by Olga Knipper Chekhov to the dying writer's bedside in the early morning hours of July 2, 1904. It is clear that Chekhov has only a little while to live. Without any comment on the matter, Troyat tells his readers that this Dr. Schworer ordered up a bottle of champagne. Nobody had asked for champagne, of course. He just took it upon himself to do it. but this little piece of human business struck me as an extraordinary action. Before I really knew what I was going to do with it or how I was going to proceed, I felt I had been launched into a short story of my own then and there. I wrote a few lines and then a page or two more. How did Dr. Schwörer go about ordering champagne and at that late hour at this hotel in Germany? How was it delivered to the room and by whom, etc.? What was the protocol involved when the champagne arrived? Then I stopped and went ahead to finish reading the biography. But just as soon as I'd finished the book, I once again turned my attention back to Dr. Schwörer and that business of the champagne. I was seriously interested in what I was doing, but what was I doing? The only thing that was clear to me was that I thought I saw an opportunity to pay homage, if I could bring it off to do it rightly and honorably, to Chekhov, the writer who has meant so much to me for such a long time. I tried out 10 or 12 openings to the piece, first one beginning and then another, but nothing felt right. Gradually, I began to move the story away from those final moments, back to the occasion of Chekhov's first public hemorrhage from tuberculosis, something that occurred in a restaurant in Moscow in the company of his friend and publisher, Suvoyan. Then came the hospitalization and the scene with Tolstoy, the trip with Olga to Badenweiler, the brief period of time there in the hotel together before the end, the young bellman who makes two important appearances in the Chekhov suite, and at the end, the mortician who, like the bellman, isn't to be found in the biographical account. The story was a hard one to write, given the factual basis of the material. I couldn't stray what had happened, nor did I want to. As much as anything, I needed to figure out how to breathe life into actions that were merely suggested or not given moment in the biographical telling. And finally, I saw that I needed to set my imagination free and simply invent within the confines of the story. I knew as I was writing this story that it was a good deal different from anything I'd ever done before. I'm pleased and grateful that it seems to have come together. 318 to 19. End of note.